Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and I'm going to be having some crosswords with someone. So that's a little pun, a little play on words for you, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm going to be talking about crossword puzzles with someone who's intimately connected to them, and connected not only with the solving of them, but the creation and the editing of them. So if you are a cruciverbalist, definitely keep it tuned right here, because I have in the studio at WGBB Stanley Newman. Maybe not a household word, but he's probably in your household if you get Newsday. Why is that, Stanley?
Well, because since 1988, Dave, I've been Newsday's crossword editor.
Ooh. Journalist puzzles, yeah. So, and you've written a book about the process of, first of all, falling in love with crossword puzzles, and your journey from being, well, doing something completely other to becoming an editor and maker of crosswords.
That's right, Dave. My new book, Cruciverbalism, A Crossword Fanatic's Guide to Life in the Grid, is half autobiography, and believe me, I never would have thought that someone in the puzzle business would get to write an autobiography, but it's half memoir, half how I got to be in the puzzle world, and the other half instructional to take either a beginning puzzler by the hand or someone who thinks they know how, what crosswords are all about, and pull back the curtain a little bit and show some real useful hints, tips, and secrets to solving crosswords better. And I am a mathematician and statistician by training. I've lived on Long Island since the early 80s. Took the Long Island Railroad to work on Wall Street job for like 5 days a week like everybody else. A recreational doer of crosswords like everyone else. The New York Times on the way to work just to get my brain started. My life took a change direction because of a little ad I saw in the New York Times puzzle page in 1981. That was, come to the Stamford Marriott Hotel and compete in the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament. I didn't think a whole lot of it, but I thought, hey, I think I'm pretty good. Why don't I spend a weekend in Stamford, Connecticut, and see really how good I am? I went up there. It was like a revelation, an epiphany. While I did not win or anything like that, I finished in 13th place out of 125.
Well, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, not bad, yeah.
What was the epiphany, though? It's a bunch of people solving puzzles.
It's like, let's say you like drinking wine with dinner every night, and you just buy, you know, you buy your jug of wine, you know, 5 liters for $9.99, and you drink it for the health reasons, and then you go to Napa Valley.
Yeah, everybody drinks it for the health reasons.
Well, I'm trying to put a good spin on it, to understand. And let's say then you go to the North Fork, and you take a tour of one of the many vineyards there, and you have a really good tour guide who explains what wine is all about and how it's made and what makes good wines from bad wines and how to appreciate the various aspects of wine making. You could leave there with a whole new outlook on wine and begin to take wine that much more seriously.
Okay.
Something very similar happened to me as it related to crosswords. I finished in 13th place out of 125 or so. It was a very lucky 13.
Right.
I decided, based on my experience there, that I could improve my skills seeing how the whole tournament was set up. And for the next year, on my own, I did hundreds upon hundreds of crosswords.
So like three a day or something like
much
that.
Much more, yeah, more, probably well over 1,000 in the course of a year. Looking up every word I didn't know, creating little file cards with every new meaning of it. Yeah, I was a little obsessive about it.
Okay, it's cool. That's cool.
Being not really much of a physical athlete in school, I found my competitive itches were well scratched by this particular event, and I thought I could get better at it. Over the course of the next year, I did all these crosswords, did all these words, tried to improve my speed, right? Fast enough, but not so fast you're not watching what you're doing. I returned to that Stamford, Connecticut tournament in 1982.
Mm-hmm. 1 year later.
Yeah, only a year later, and discovered to my astonishment that my skills had improved by a quantum level compared to everyone else in the room. And, in fact, in 1982, not only did I win that Stamford, Connecticut tournament, by which I ended up with an article all about myself in People magazine, of all things. Talk about weird. This, by dumb luck, happened to be the first year that a true national championship was organized, sponsored by Games Magazine and Merriam-Webster Dictionaries. And guess what? In August of that year, just a few months later, I won that tournament too. And that
what was the prize? Like $40?
Prize was $1,500 and a 6-foot pencil. The $1,500, I can't tell you where that is, but I've still got the 6-foot pencil in my basement. And that
I hope you're not doing bad things with it, but okay, yeah.
For display purposes only.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that got me off to the races in becoming involved in the business end of crosswords. And I began editing a newsletter that expressed my point of view. Here's what I think crosswords ought to be. They ought to be reflective of popular culture and really shouldn't depend so much on the crazy words that a lot of people think are in puzzles. And of all places, the New York Times, the gold standard of puzzledom, had become 17th century sopranos and rivers in Bulgaria and genus of fruit flies. I mean, in 2001 or 1985, for that matter, who cares and who cared? The answer was only that editor of New York Times crossword. And I was the first puzzle professional to go on the record to take on the 800-pound gorilla of the puzzle business.
I mean, you did this when the guy who was editing them was still alive. So now we can make fun of the dead, a guy named Eugene T. Maleska. If you're an ordinary crossword puzzle person, you saw the name, it's like, oh, okay, it's his puzzles, and they were tough. But you looked at them as someone who got into puzzles very deeply and said, well, this guy, he's from the Stone Age, he's from the Dinosaur Age, and you literally named him, took him on in, what did you do, a newsletter?
Well, yes, to step back for just a few steps. The first step I took toward entering the puzzle world was learning how puzzles were made. And thanks to my now friend, Will Shortz, who is now puzzle editor of the New York Times,
right,
who back in the 80s was the organizer of the crossword tournaments that I won. He was the tournament director of the Stamford, Connecticut tournament, and the U.S. Open. He was an editor at Games Magazine. So with much assistance from him, I learned how crosswords were made and developed the skills that enabled me to create puzzles that I then began publishing in places like Games Magazine and various published books and so forth. And the more I learned the guts of really how puzzles were put together, the more that I began to see how it really wasn't necessary to include these crazy words, that with a little bit of time and effort, one could create crosswords where every single word was a word you've heard of, a straightforward word. Yeah, it could be more difficult. You could put interesting words. You know, maybe the people might find interesting the word, the fear of peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth. I mean, that's a fun word, but I think a 17th century Albanian soprano is probably a little less interesting.
Yeah. And what is the word for fear of peanut butter?
Oh, it's arachibutyrophobia, of course.
Of course.
A-R-A-C-H-I-B-U-T-Y-R-O-P-H-O-B-I-A. Ding. No,
yeah,
I know
that line. We should have a fear of Iraqis. That's what we should have been going after. But wait, you wouldn't put. Have you ever put that in a crossword?
Of course not.
Oh,
No, I just use that as a silly example.
But that was a real word.
Yeah, that was a real word. Okay. It was coined. All words are invented, of course. But that word was coined as a funny take on phobias. But what I was trying to say is that there was no reason for words that you couldn't use in a conversation with someone who never would do crosswords. There was no reason for words like that to be in puzzles other than the laziness of people who create the puzzles and the laziness of editors who say, well, that's fine. I don't need to put in effort. I mean, I'm just going to publish that the way it is.
Well, playing straw man, though, wouldn't Maleska have said, everything's being dumbed down in America. Kids are getting stupid. Our TVs, attention spans are short. Why not force people to have, like, really weird, obscure puzzle answers?
He didn't take that tack at all. He was very much the defender of the old guard. And remember, he was the house. He was the editor of the best-known puzzle in America, and which had a certain reputation. And no matter what Dr. Maleska did, the puzzle would still have that reputation. But I began talking on the record in my newsletter. You see, after I began making crosswords, I thought that if I were going to be taken seriously ever someday in the puzzle business on the business end, I needed to become an editor of crosswords because that's where the action is and was, and it still is.
Okay, yeah.
The best-known people in the puzzle business are editors, in fact, not the creators or the publishers or anything like that. And so...
So when you see Will Shortz's name on a puzzle, he didn't write it, he just vetted it.
That's correct. He decides what the crossword editor, perhaps much more than the editor of a newspaper, I get asked all the time, what does a crossword editor do as opposed to the person who puts the puzzle together? The crossword editor really is the one who decides what the puzzle is going to be all about, what the level of difficulty is, what sorts of words are going to be allowed, the level of humor and off-the-wallness, like to call it, a crossword is going to have, and what mixture of dictionary words and popular culture a crossword is going to have. Is it going to be geared to any particular generation or age group? Crosswords can very much reflect any particular point of view, not political. I mean,
well, I guess
vocabulary, level of difficulty. Crosswords these days are much more carefully edited than they used to be. And going off the track and going backwards and forwards, I would like to think I had a little something to do with it, because back in the early 80s, I published my own newsletter. I got into the puzzle world in earnest by beginning to publish my own crossword newsletter, where I functioned as editor and publisher. I discovered, upon, as anyone would after looking at the puzzle business for just a moment, that there are very few puzzle editor jobs available.
Well, yeah.
And because people hold on to those jobs for a long time, as long as one's mind is active, you don't have to get on a train, you don't have to exhibit any particular physical skills. You have to have brain sharp. You have to be able to open your mail. You have to be able to pick up a pencil.
Right.
And so people have that job when they have it for a very long time. In fact, virtually all the puzzle editorial job openings come about when someone dies. And
I looked at it
very logically at that time. I was unwilling to wait for someone to die, and I wanted to become a puzzle editor, so I took a very unconventional route, and I don't think it's been followed ever since. I started my own publication. The same way that Connie Mack set the major league record for managing the Philadelphia Athletics for 50 years. He could do that because he owned the team.
Well, yeah.
And so I wasn't going to fire the editor as publisher. And I, using my newsletter as a foundation, a way to get my skills honed.
And you put puzzles in the newsletter.
That's right. I would accept puzzles from contributors. I would vet them. I would tinker with them. I would mold the level of difficulty the way I wanted. And I used the prose part of my newsletter as a forum to discuss what I thought were important issues in the crossword world. There was no such publication at that time. And it was around that time that I began to take a really close look at the New York Times crossword and discovered what I thought were major deficiencies. The marquee crossword of the country, I felt, could have been doing a much better job. The reason why I think no one else had taken Maleska on at that point was that almost everyone else of any note in the business depended on Maleska, at least partially, for their livelihood. Maleska was publishing books series with a major publisher, publishing a brand new New York Times crossword every day. And so if you were a big name in the puzzle world and wanted to get your name out there and make a few bucks publishing your own crosswords, you had to cross paths with Maleska.
Right.
I had no such relationship with Maleska. I was not looking to inherit his job someday. I had no bridges to burn with him, and in fact, I really had this missionary-like zeal to try to make the puzzle-solving world aware that I thought the New York Times puzzle editor could be doing a better job, and here's how. And, of course, Dr. Maleska really didn't take too kindly to it, and for several years, he basically swatted me away. The big turning point in that was the 75th anniversary year of Crosswords in 1988, where many, many newspapers across the country made some headlines about that. And because I had gotten my name in a couple of papers because of what I was saying in my newsletter, I was appearing together with Maleska in many of those articles. And, in fact, now reporters were asking him to justify some of the things that he was doing. And that was a major leap forward in the movement.
And he tried to swat you away a little bit.
Yes, and, of course, it didn't work. I'm still here, God bless.
Well,
God bless the puzzlers who thought what I was doing was worth doing. And, of course, I didn't originate the whole idea of solver-friendly, what I call New Wave crosswords. I was really very much a disciple of Will Shortz, who, as editor of Games Magazine, had been publishing for quite a few years these sorts of lively, interesting, in some cases very difficult crosswords, but crosswords made difficult by cleverness and deliberate obfuscation, as opposed to digging your nose deep in the depths of the dictionary and using words that no one, ever heard of, but wouldn't even care about. Hi, Dave. Great to be here talking about cruciverbalism.
Let's get into the digging of a solving of a crossword puzzle, because people who feel like they'll pick up the puzzle on a Tuesday and then they'll wonder, well, why a couple of days later they're having so much trouble on a puzzle. That is intentional. It's not just the fact that you're more alert earlier in the week or anything like that.
You are exactly right. I hope many of your visitors have got access to the Internet, because on my website, www.stanxwords.com, I go into great detail about what the Newsday Crossword is all about, solving tips for during the weekend, as well as the, for many, dreaded Saturday Stumper, the toughest puzzle in Newsday by far. Deliberately, the Monday and Tuesday crosswords are designed to be as absolutely simple as possible, far easier than New York Times, probably far easier than any other newspaper crossword anywhere in the country. It's very important to me to have a place where beginners can go and get started, where you've got a puzzle where absolutely every single answer word is a word that everyone knows. Every single clue is pointing directly at the answer without any ambiguity, without any deviance of any kind. I mean, five-letter word, kind of apple given to teachers.
Shiny.
All right, we've got to waste that. Type of fruit given to teachers, five letters, is of course apple. Or if it was a four-letter fruit, Bartlett or Bosque. Answer,
yeah, okay.
Pear.
Yeah.
If you just had even type of fruit, five letters. That doesn't sound like a hard clue, but in fact, there are many possible answers, and so no one is going to be able to fill that in right away.
That's more like a Wednesday clue, or?
Yeah. Remember, in a crossword, every single word interlocks with other words.
Sure.
And you've got, on a daily crossword, about 80 answers. On a Monday or Tuesday puzzle, there are going to be a couple of dozen, probably, that anyone with a high school vocabulary and who reads the newspaper every day, there's going to be at least a couple of dozen clues that you're going to know the answer to without even looking at how many letters there are.
Right.
And what that takes is a very carefully edited crossword where anything that might be a difficult answer, any clue that might not be direct, is altered to point you like a laser toward the answer. I've talked with many, many thousands of puzzlers one-to-one over the past 20 years or so, and it's amazed me how many literate people, people who are English majors, people who are newspaper reporters, come up to me and say, you know, I've never gotten the knack. I've never figured out how. And I always tell them, you're doing the wrong crosswords. Crosswords unlike Scrabble or Monopoly or Chinese checkers don't come with a set of instructions. You're just sort of expected to know what it is you're supposed to do. And in fact, people know what they're supposed to do, read the clues and put the answers in. But there's a lot more to it than that.
So what are some other things that people ought to know if they're tackling, let's say, a Wednesday puzzle? Where it's starting to get a little more difficult.
Yes. Now, what makes the crossword a little more difficult as you move toward Friday, starting from Monday? There are going to be fewer and fewer of the clues that are going to be immediately obvious. So you're going to have fewer places to start. There will be a little bit more vagueness. Like on a Monday, if the answer is pear, Bartlett or Bosque. You give two examples of something, and the answer can't possibly be anything else. On a Wednesday, type of fruit, four letters. So you don't know if it's a date or a lime or a pear or a plum or any one of the other four-letter fruits. That's going to slow you down. Where I might deal in a fact that would be obvious to people. The capital of Massachusetts, six letters. I mean, that's not going to be too difficult, I hope. Again, if you read the newspaper every day, you're going to know what the capital of Massachusetts is. There are many more difficult ways to clue the answer Boston, for example. I mean,
Benjamin
Franklin's birthplace. I mean, maybe that's easy, but you're going to have to. Everyone's going to know that, and I could get even more difficult than that, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, well, I'm talking to you also. There's things like misdirection and weird kind of puns.
I love misdirection and puns. Puns show up most often on Mondays and Tuesdays in my titles. For example, I love thinking up titles, and titles are perhaps the most important thing for a crossword solver to look at before they begin. A title on every Newsday crossword is meant to give you a little hint as to what the main idea of the crossword is without telling you too much. I'll give you one of my favorite examples. I had a crossword a few months ago where the answers were all related to articles of clothing. Like, could have been things like toothpaste cap and the cat in the hat and brake shoes, if you see what I mean. Each of the phrases has a keyword that, and taken out of context, is something to where it's a part of brakes, B-R-A-K-E, auto part.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, yeah.
So what kind of title could I give? Well, I could have said things to where, but that's too obvious. And I thought, let my mind wander, as I love it to do, and I came up with the title, What's On Today?, which almost sounds like it's about TV listings, and you've got to go get through the puzzle a little bit to see that What's On Today has nothing to do with television. It has to do with what you're putting on. And there is an innocent way for me to get my devious wordplay into the Newsday puzzle on Monday and Tuesday. But it's that kind of deviousness that now gets put into the clues as you approach Friday and right. Saturday, where some of my favorite tricky clues I'd love to share with you. Take the very innocent phrase, leaves home, which sounds like you're going out to dinner or to work or whatever,
right.
and leaves home four letters on a Monday would probably be goes or something like that. Right. However, on a Saturday, the deliberate misdirection, which makes it sound like you're just leaving your residence, where leaves is a verb. Just think about it. Leaves can also be a noun.
Right.
And in fact, if I wanted a real tough clue for the answer, tree.
Right, it's the home of
leaves. Right. Home would be a really mean clue for that.
Oh, man.
And I love tinkering with what I call the natural ambiguities of the English language and telling you on Saturday, it's not called a stumper for no reason.
Right.
You have to suspect everything. And it's not, yes, it's more difficult, but it's, I always want people to solve it. And it can be solved if you know, as you should know, on Saturday, you can't take anything at face value. You've got to pull those words apart. Think about the other meanings words can have, and don't assume just because it sounds like an everyday colloquial English phrase that has a meaning you recognize, that doesn't mean you can't pull the words apart and make it mean something entirely different.
Like, what's another example of a weird...
Oh, here's
misdirecting.
Here's another one of the great ones. I had one across in one of my Saturday stumpers a few years ago. The answer, scofflaw. Now, we all know what a scofflaw is, someone who doesn't pay his traffic fines or who I have to come after or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to think of a real mean, devious clue for scofflaw. Well, I let my mind wander, and how do I come up with devious clues? I try to think of words that have multiple meanings that are associated with those answers. And so the word fine is associated with scofflaw, of course.
Yeah.
A fine is what the scofflaw is attempting to avoid. Fine can be a noun, but of course fine can also be an adjective, can't
right.
it? And so, with a little bit of devious thinking,
yeah.
I came up with the very devious clue, fine skipper, which sounded like a nautical clue,
yeah.
but in fact, the literal meaning, you ought to pull the words apart, and it's not a very good captain of a ship, it is a person who skips
on a
fine. If every clue in a puzzle were like that, no one could solve it.
Yeah.
And in fact, putting a mean clue like that is like telling somebody a joke. Once a clue like that shows up in my Newsday crossroads, I can't repeat it. I have to continue not so much topping myself, but coming up with a completely different answer. And so it's really hard to come up with clues like that, as you might imagine. You've got to sit and you've got to let your mind wander. You open up the dictionary if you want to see what words are associated with it. But even if three or four new clues in a puzzle on a Saturday stumper are like that, that's good.
Right.
There is vagueness, like I explained before, about the fruits. When you have a fact about Boston, I mean, I would come up on a Saturday puzzle with something I hope would be really interesting about Boston that you'd like to know, but you probably don't know about Boston. I'd probably open up a tour book about Boston, we'll see some of the attractions are, and just something interesting that probably isn't top of mind, but you enjoy knowing it. And that's the sort of thing I put in for with the answers were facts as opposed to words.
Well, you keep talking about, again, putting in stuff and making these clues and these titles. How much of a puzzle that's in the Newsday is you after someone else has submitted it?
Well, that's a very good question. In the case of my friend Will Shorts, he has said on the record that as much as half or more of a puzzle that appears in print, he is responsible for the clues of. Fortunately for me, I work with a much smaller group of regular puzzle makers than Will does.
Yeah.
Will gets 75 submissions a week, and he can only fill seven spots a week, remember. I get about 10 submissions a week. Many of them, most of them, are from regulars who know very well what it is I'm looking for in terms of level of difficulty, what easy clues are, the sorts of words that absolutely have no place on a Monday, words that, as I've already said, words on Monday have to be words that everyone knows without any doubt. So because my regular contributors, and they range from Randy Ross, who is the principal of Great Neck South High School,
yeah.
to an insurance guy in Pasadena, to a young guy in Calgary, Alberta. They geographically dispersed, a real estate agent in a tiny town in Illinois. But these are all people that have come to me through reputation or through my website, one thing or another, learned about me, and I have sort of train them into what it is I'm looking for. I would say less that has to be changed in the puzzles that I receive because my contributors know very well what it is I'm looking for. But I don't want to repeat clues from Monday to Tuesday or Wednesday, for example, and maybe they don't have a difficulty level quite right, and so I want to keep as much of the puzzle as I can. I don't want it to be my puzzle every day. I mean, it's there, it's the contributor's name on the Newsday page as well as mine every day. I will change answers to make them harder or easier to prevent repeats, that sort of thing, but perhaps as much as a third or more could be changed, but I certainly want to change as little as possible.
Now, in the old days before computers, when you were doing these things, you just took a blank piece of paper with a ruler and made lines and things. And
yes, I learned how to do crosswords the old-fashioned way with a piece of graph paper, a pencil, and a very large eraser.
Well, yeah.
You think you need to make mistakes when you solve crosswords. When you make them, you need to get those words thinking up. It's impossible to do it without an eraser.
I can imagine.
I started using a computer about 7 or 8 years ago. And just to be clear, I use my computer the same way a carpenter uses a screwdriver. The computer is a tool by which I use a database of words that I have put together to tell me what words fit best in certain places as they go in one at a time. After all, you can't very well have a five-letter word that starts D, Q, J.
Right? Yeah.
And the computer is smart enough to know that, smart enough to take all the words and phrases that I know, either from dictionary or reading the newspaper or TV shows and, you know, all combinations of things. And based on a single word I might put in, say, scofflaws, one across. So I'm going to put that word in. I'm going to figure out where black squares need to go so I can actually fill in everything. The computer will then tell me the word underneath, based on just the letters, just the letter arrangements of scofflaw going in the other way, what are the words that are going to fit best. And I take a look at that list, and I pick the one that I like, that fits well, that's as friendly and interesting a word as I can. And I create that puzzle one word at a time. It's actually just as hard, or perhaps harder, to create an easy puzzle, which I do, by the way, under pseudonyms. Can I reveal a secret to your listeners now that they maybe didn't know? Those Newsday regulars, people that do my puzzle regularly in Newsday, know that I do a Saturday Stumper under my own name, the initials SN, average once a month, once every other month. But what they probably don't know is that I have on average one Newsday crossword that I create in the paper a week, about 1 week, under a pseudonym. Not only do I create the toughest crosswords that appear in Newsday under my own name on Saturday, perhaps the easiest crosswords that appear on Newsday on Monday or Tuesday, under the pseudonym Sally R. Stein, which will be a recognizable name to anyone who does the Newsday crossword, but that's in fact me. Sally R. Stein, the letters in that name can be rearranged to spell It's Really S-N. And it's not, and this is one time where this pseudonym is not meant to confuse anybody. I felt that because my name was associated with really difficult puzzles when it was my byline, I thought people might get the wrong impression that any puzzle with my name might be really hard.
Yeah.
And so to prevent any possible confusion, I created this other pseudonym for myself for Monday. And so it's my puzzle on Monday or Tuesday almost every week under Sally R. Stein. And if you take a good look at it, you probably might not think it could be the same person. It's sort of making a split personality, schizophrenic. This I don't know. But it's simply different skills, right? You have serious actors who can do comedy and vice versa. Maybe not everyone can. But I take just as great pains to make the puzzle as straightforward and easy as I've already mentioned in the ways that I've mentioned on a Monday as I do to make them tough and scratch your head devious as I can on Saturday. It's simply different talents, different skills. And on a Monday, I'm working with a much smaller database of words, many words that would be perfectly fine on Saturday, would be too hard to use on a Monday, and I hope my Newsday audience appreciates it. From the letters I get and from the people I meet in the various places I talk, I'm pretty sure they do.
How long does it take you to put together a puzzle of a relatively normal difficulty you're doing one yourself?
Well, fortunately, thanks to the computers, it takes much less time. Computer never forgets a word, of course, once I put it in. Just think about the process. I need a six-letter word, the third letter is an E, and the sixth letter is a D. Gee, maybe I could think of them all, or maybe I couldn't, but the computer never forgets any. And so pressing a button with my professional software, it'll give me a list of everything that fits, as well as how well they fit. And so because the computer never forgets a word, the linkage, the mix of words that show up in my crosswords turn out much better than a crossword I would make just from the words I happen to remember in my own mind. And like everybody else, my memory isn't perfect.
Right. So, but length of time, is it 2, 3, 4?
Oh, no, nothing like that. Fortunately, a typical diagram that I make for an easy crossword might take about a half an hour.
You're kidding me.
Well, I'm a professional, so and I've been doing it for a while, so I'm pretty good at it. And it might take another half an hour or so to write clues. Although, for a Saturday supper, it takes far longer.
Well, okay, well, I believe you.
It's a puzzlement.
Hi, Dave. Great to be with you talking about cruciverbalism.
And you've also done some sort of specialty puzzles, like for major organizations. There's a story in there, like probably the most you've ever been paid for a crossword for anything. involved a rather famous organization that makes
yes, it's very hard to believe that some lowly puzzle guy like me actually has had contact with about 4 people out of the Forbes 400. Can you believe it? It crosses all income levels, demographic levels, and I have to share this with you.
Yeah.
My crosswords have been done regularly by Roy Disney, nephew of Uncle Walt, who is on the Forbes 400. My crosswords have been done by Gordon Getty, son of Jay Paul.
Nice. They don't have anything else to do with their time.
Well, you can be sure people at that particular level are occupying their days different pursuits from you and I, probably. But I know for a fact one other fellow, his name is Edgar Bronfman Sr.,
yeah.
Former chairman of Seagram's before he sold it to a Dutch French conglomerate a few years ago. He and I met as a result of me doing a birthday crossword for his 60th birthday a little more than 10 years ago, commissioned by his brother Charles, former owner of the Montreal Expos.
Good heavens.
With cooperation of the New York Times, I created a crossword that was to go on a fake New York Times magazine section, where in place of the New York Times crossword was a crossword that I made all about his life, his helicopter and his elementary school teachers and his favorite wines and everything else that his brother could think of. It took 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was asked what I was going to charge, and it was the most difficult question I ever had to answer. I tried to liken it to a work of art. If Leroy Neiman was going to be commissioned to do a portrait of Edgar Bronfman using his outstanding, unique talents, and it took him 3 weeks to produce a work, he'd probably charge a lot more than I was going to charge. But because of the amount of time and all of that, I decided to ask for $7,500 because it sounded like $10,000 was too much. Although they instantly agreed, I just as instantly regretted asking for only $7,500. Anyway,
this is a man who's worth billions.
Several billions, according to the Forbes folks who should know.
Well, my goodness. The one thing, though, that I was a little disappointed in is that the puzzle that I like the best, and it is in Newsday on Sundays, is the cross sticks. Is that the word for it?
Yeah, cross sticks.
I love that because even more so than a crossword, you've got the phrase running across, so you can tell what the word might be that way. And then the first letters going down of all the clues add up to that.
Yes.
I love the whole...
Acrostic is a very different kind of puzzle, but you've hit on a very strong similarity between that and a crossword. You're going to have a whole list of clues. You have to fill into a diagram. It'll spell out a quotation when you're finished. Chances are no one who does that puzzle is going to know all the answers right off the bat.
Right.
Because of the way all the clues and the answers interact and the first letters of all the answers spelling out where the quote is coming from, you really only need to get 2 or 3 or 4 of the answers before things begin to interact and you get a couple of words here to put you back to the clues and back to the answers. And it's amazing how that process works. I'm not involved in cross-stick puzzles. I know how to make them. The cross-stick on the Newsday page isn't mine.
Right.
But no, it has quite a following, but I don't think it's nearly as strong as the crossword.
Interesting. Because my only problem with crosswords is that you really, most of the time, don't know if you got it right until you see the answer page.
And even that isn't true anymore online. My Newsday crossword is available every day on Newsday.com as well as my website, stanxwords.com. And with the software that comes with the crossword, not only do you know right away when you get it finished, because when you put in the last correct answer, a little message will come up on the screen, congratulations, you finished it. You can also get hints, which you can't really get you can't ask a question of a newspaper, of course, but you can press a button and say, okay, I don't know what this letter is, tell me please, or I don't know what this word is, tell me please. And it's not cheating, and by the way, those of you out there who might never look up an answer and insist on getting it all right, well, I would not try to change your mind, but I think you're missing out on an important dimension in crossword solving, and that is learning things you don't know, learning interesting meanings of words you might not be familiar with, learning interesting facts about everyday people, places, and things that you might not otherwise know. And so if you don't fill it in, that's something you're never going to know, and I strongly recommend that maybe only as a last resort, at whatever point you think appropriate, that you do look up a meaning or a fact about puzzle, clue, and answer if you happen not to know it.
Discover the joys of ESNE.
Well, ESNE, see, ESNE, E-S-N-E, has gotten a really bad rap because ESNE is one of those very crosswordese words that used to appear in crosswords all the time, and I venture to say, in my 18 years in Newsday, well over 5,000 crosswords, that word hasn't appeared even once.
Whoa. So it's a defunct kind of word. You should put it in like one time.
And why should I do that exactly?
Because it's a defunct Maleska word.
No, well, I tell you what, I would not mention the good doctor's name in a Newsday crossword, and I would not attempt to perpetuate any of the things that I beat on him so mercilessly about.
But you are very much happier with the times now under Will Shortz's...
Will Shortz is, not only was he the perfect choice to inherit Maleska's job, his skills, his resume, but his desire, and his diplomacy, by the way, he is a great ambassador for crosswords. He has his weekly show on NPR, which is very, very well listened to nationwide. He is...
Oh, well, listen, before I forget, mm-hmm. Speaking of media, I mean, you've done more than this program. You mentioned you were on TV. In fact, payday for something.
Yeah, I'm a trivia bug going way back. I have a syndicated trivia column called Stan's Trivia Bits. Oh. It's Newsday doesn't run it, due mostly, almost entirely, I think, to the Newsday's current financial circumstances, such as they are. But anyone who would like to see some of the trivia things that I disseminate nationwide can go to www.creators.com, which is the newspaper syndicate that distributes my crosswords. I'm also the editor of a trivia encyclopedia called 10,000 Answers, the Ultimate Trivia Encyclopedia.